By tradition, this is one of the special Shabbatot prior to the holiday of Pesach. Specifically, this is Shabbat Zachor, which is the Sabbath prior to the holiday of Purim. Purim, of course, is that holiday which we celebrate what it's like to live in diaspora, right? What does it mean to live in diaspora? It means that you're not in power. To be in diaspora means that somebody else is controlling your life. So we have this wonderful Purim story, right, in which the Jews are doing just fine. Here they live in Shushan, they're in Persia, you know, everything's going great. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of the blue, a disaster strikes. The Jews are going to be destroyed. So this is the Shabbat prior to Purim, in which we traditionally read that section from Deuteronomy, which we call Amalek. Who is Amalek? Well, the Israelites had just left Egypt. They're traveling through the wilderness, right? They're in the Sinai. Okay, and Amalek is this group of people that attacks the Jewish people. But they attack who? The Nechalashim, the weakened ones, the stragglers, the people who were behind. In other words, Amalek are kind of cowards, and they're the people who were around Israel in order to get these former slaves who really had no idea how to defend themselves. As a matter of fact, Moses went the way he went in part because he was trying to keep them from being attacked and so that they wouldn't find their way back to Egypt, because these were weakened people. So Amalek is the tribe that attacks us, okay, and cuts off the fringes, so to speak. But it's become, over the years, a prototype for anti-Semitism. So who was Amalek? Hitler was a descendant of Amalek. Haman, the evil person of the Purim story, okay, he is a direct descendant of Amalek. And indeed, all of the enemies of the Jewish people who persecute us, they are descendants of Amalek. Now, to move to American life, because after all, we too live in a diaspora community, which is to say we live outside of the land of Israel, and we do not live in a country, right, which is run by Jews. Everybody has noticed that? I said recently to somebody, you know, I don't think there'll ever be a president of the United States who's Jewish, and that's my personal belief. But then, you know, there's Barack Obama, and I didn't think that would happen either. So, but the person said to me, really, you don't think there'll ever be a president of the United States who's Jewish? And I said, I don't think so. You know, I think we'll rise to every position in this country, but I don't know that there'll ever be a truly Jewish president of the United States. So here we live in this American democracy in which religion matters. It does. You cannot deny that religion matters in this country, but it matters in a kind of an interesting way. From the beginning, religion was considered to be kind of a personal matter. Formal religious affiliation is not supposed to influence your standing in public life. Did you all get the email about the Barack Obama's appointments that asked whether he's forming a cabinet or a minion? You know, there's a lot of Jews in the Obama entourage, and there was that unfortunate comment that was made by Rahm Emanuel's father when he was interviewed regarding his son in Israel, in which he had the indiscretion to say, in response to a question of what will, you know, will Obama protect the state of Israel, he had the indiscretion to say, come on, Rahm's there, you know, what do you think that's about? So, you know, here we have this kind of a interesting position in this democracy known as the United States, in which religion is not supposed to matter, but it does. No, there's not supposed to be any bias for or against religion in a government organization or in the courts. And yet, we all know that religion is an ever-present matter in American life. The assumption, therefore, that somehow religion doesn't matter is sort of wrong, and it's not even universally held. This Jeffersonian high wall of separation between church and state has been debated since the beginning of the country, because there are some people who believe that this, in fact, is a Christian nation, and everybody else is sort of here by the sufferance of the larger population. I suspect you have all heard that, particularly where we live. So the reality, I think, is somewhere between the two. I mean, to my mind, we live in a secular Christian country, right? I mean, if you go to Israel, everybody takes Shabbat off, right? Because it's a secularized or sometimes religious Jewish country. And in the United States, the calendar is a is the Gregorian calendar, and the public holidays are Christian or American holidays. I mean, everybody takes Christmas Day off, but only the Jews take Yom Kippur off, right? So it's not, certainly not a Jewish nation, and it's, I would say, it's a secularized Christian country. And the question to my mind is, you know, what does that mean? We live with this reality in the United States that we are a distinct minority. And there's a tension between the separation of church and state and this secular Christianity, and this tension is always going to exist. So you get those clergy folks like Jerry Johnson, not to mention one name in Johnson County, right, who is sort of on the side of, no, this is a Christian country, the rest of you are sort of here by sufferance of the Christian community. Okay, and then you get other people who are extraordinarily liberal, right, and everybody's exactly the same, and we have every opinion in between. Well, 5 years ago, I think just about 5 years ago, as a matter of fact, this week, I think maybe a couple of weeks ago was the anniversary, there was this Mel Gibson movie, right? Everybody remembers The Passion of the Christ, and you'll remember I was a little upset about it, because I saw it as a classic statement of anti-Semitism. I mean, there were all the elements in that movie of deicide. You know, the Jews say, let his death be upon us and upon our descendants. It was sort of a classic statement. And you know, we were appalled because the Catholic Church since 1986 has got guidelines that say that such things can't be said. And yet the bishops of the United States did not come out against the movie. So we saw it as sort of classically a bad thing. And the all these evangelicals went, and they loved it, and all the Catholics went, and they loved it. And we Jews hated that movie because we thought that Christians were once again going to accuse the Jewish community of deicide, right? The crime of killing God, and it didn't happen. Didn't happen. The movie was classically anti-Semitic, that's true. And the deicide charge never occurred. Why? 2% of the people in the United States, according to a Jewish poll that was done by the American Jewish Committee, 2% of the people that saw that movie said that the Jews were responsible for deicide. What happened? And the answer is, as best anybody could figure it out, the Catholic Church stopped teaching with Vatican II in 1965, stopped teaching the deicide charge, and it went away. It's amazing. It's amazing. Vast numbers of American Christians, okay, people who are very religious, saw that movie and didn't get an anti-Semitic message. We have learned that we do not live in a perfect world, but that things can in fact change. And if you don't teach anti-Semitism, then in point of fact, the American public does not have to be anti-Semitic. A little over 40 years ago, under the sainted Pope John the 23rd, decided that four things needed to definitely change about Catholic teaching. One, neither all the Jews at that time, nor certainly their descendants, are to be held responsible for killing, and they would say Christ. I don't say that, but they would say Christ, they wouldn't say Jesus. Yeah, that's first. Secondly, astonishingly, God did not withdraw God's covenant from the Jewish people. God's covenants are eternal, and therefore God continues to maintain the covenant with the Jewish people that God established in the Torah. Three, Jews do not bear the shame, ignominy, of killing the Son of God, God's appearance on earth. We are not to be defamed for taking part in the execution, the crucifixion. And fourth, anti-Semitism is wrong. We need to know that church teaching has changed, and by God, it has made a difference. And we also need to know that that ought to make a difference in Jewish lives. I mean, how often do I see in the Jewish community this assumption that we shouldn't talk about religion? We shouldn't compare religions. The Jewish community's reaction to being in the United States was shah still, old Yiddish, right? Just be silent, be quiet, don't tell anybody what we believe, and maybe everyone will ignore it. And there has been a result in the United States, at least in my opinion, of incredible ignorance, both in the Jewish community and outside of the Jewish community. It's true, not everyone is our ally, but there are religious people who separate between church and state. There are religious people who care about the Jewish community and who want to engage with us in dialogue. It would help us to be better educated about our Judaism so that we could share with them what it is we believe, because then we won't be considered so strange. Some years ago, I got into the Overland Park Rotary Club. I'm no longer a member for other reasons. They had a rabbi as a member. And they had a guy in the Rotary that they were calling rabbi. Now, I never did figure out what that term meant. Maybe somebody here knows. But everybody suddenly got quiet when I said, oh, by the way, I'm the rabbi of a synagogue here. Because they were just not familiar, it seemed to me, with anybody bringing up overtly, I'm Jewish. It's a nice place to live. But you don't seem to go out of your way to say, here's my belief system, let's discuss this together. So, what do I see that Jews don't discuss? How many of you believe, okay, this is a trick question, Jews believe in an afterlife? Okay, good. Here's what I have to say every year when I teach the conversion class about afterlife. Do not discuss this with your Jewish friends. They don't know. Every Jewish movement for the last 2,000 years has believed in an afterlife. Reform, conservative, Orthodox, Hasidic, whatever it is. If it's a religious Jewish movement, outside of Zionism, that is. If it's a religious Jewish movement, we believe in an afterlife. And I find that Jews do not know this. I actually had a debate with somebody last week. Can you imagine debating with me? And he finally said to me, after 15 minutes of discussing afterlife, this is an intelligent person, Mark, if I talk to the other rabbis in the city, would they say the same thing? At the age of 60-something, he couldn't believe that no one had ever told him, we believe in an afterlife. Why? Because we don't teach it and we don't discuss it. Jews invariably say the wrong thing about this, and I find, at least in my travels, that it puts off the Christian community. Because Christianity very definitely believes in an afterlife, and I get questions all the time from people who say, how can you not believe in an afterlife? And I say, but we do. And they say, but I asked my Jewish friends, and they said, we don't. What are the three parts of afterlife in Judaism? The soul is eternal. That's the biggie. Every person has a soul, and the soul lives forever. Comes from God, goes back to God. Everybody. A Messiah will come and redeem the world. When the Messiah comes, the dead will be resurrected and the souls and the bodies will be reunited. Now, of those three, Reformed Jews do not believe in numbers 2 and 3. We only believe as Reformed Jews, you can believe whatever you want, doesn't make any difference, okay? But as Reformed Jews, the official position of the movement is everyone has a soul. The soul goes on forever. It is punished for no more than a year. Better to be Jewish, by the way. We only get punished for a year. Okay? It is punished for no more than a year, and then it goes to be with God for eternity. Okay? And in the Reformed belief, that is for eternity, among the Orthodox until the Messiah comes. My opinion is that it would go a long way in interfaith understanding if this point of intersection, the similarities between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam were understood. In which we could say, look, guys, we believe the same thing on this. So, of course, do we have ritual differences? Oh, my Lord, you know, try and get people to sit in this service and understand what we're doing. Of course, we have many ritual differences. Although I have to tell you, I have several good friends who are priests. And I said to him last week something about Passover week. And he said, that's not Passover week because the Catholic Church has a Passover week as well, but it's not the same as ours. And what he heard when he heard Passover week was his Passover week. And he said, you know, Mark, that's very strange. You know, that he heard a rabbi say it, but he didn't put it together with Judaism. So what I'm saying here is that we have similarities that ought to be emphasized and they ought to be taught. We all believe in the existence of a soul. Among those who are modern, we believe, and I think there are many people in the United States who this is very important to them. Okay? The religion is a personal matter. And an increasing dialogue increases the understanding and appreciation of one another. We will no longer appear as strangers to one another, particularly strange because we do not guarantee afterlife as adherents of other religions do. Now, I want to say one little thing about Islam. Islam is getting a very bad rap in the United States today, right? Why? Because what is known about Islam today is mostly Wahhabi Islam out of Saudi Arabia that's produced all these militants. And many people think that is Islam. But how many of us have ever sat and talked to a Muslim about his religion? 1, 2, 3, 4 out of a congregation of maybe 70. So a handful. So we really don't know what people believe. And frankly, the American press has not been terribly helpful on this. Mostly what I see in the newspapers is the product of radicalism and terrorism. The talk of jihad as war. But that is not Islamic doctrine. And yet, if we don't sit and talk to people, how would we know? We don't discuss as much as we would like or as much as we should because we have this aversion, it seems to me, to discuss religious life. But we Jews live with a God who commands. We live with a God who says that afterlife is guaranteed, but also we are commanded to be knowledgeable about what it is that we believe. And among the things that we believe, I don't know how many of you know about the Noahide commandments. Do you know about the 7 Noahide commandments? There are 7 commandments that if anyone keeps them, okay, we're talking about non-Jews now. If you keep these 7 commandments, there's a place for you in the world to come. What are the 7 Noahide commandments? Do not murder, do not steal, do not be sexually immoral, do not take God's name in vain, do not commit idolatry, do not tear flesh off of a living animal and eat it. It's been gone out of fashion recently. And establish courts of justice. Establish courts of justice. And if you keep those 7 Noahide commandments, which after all, we pretty much demand of everyone, then you are among the righteous of all nations. This is a place for you in the world to come. That could be the basis of interfaith dialogue. What demands do you have on people who are not Muslim? What demands do you have on people who are not Christian if we're all to live together in peace? What does your religion say about my practice? Because I can tell you what my religion says about your practice. We can all understand that regardless of our methods of worshiping God, we will inherit the world to come if we live moral lives in a particular way. My friends, there are going to be Amaleks. There are going to be people who seek to persecute us. There always have been since the 3rd century BCE. There has been anti-Jewish thought and people who have persecuted Jews. There's a long history. We are not going to live in a world free of hatred. But we can do much better, understanding that we have natural allies. We have religious people who care about us and want to preserve the modern idea that each individual is entitled to his own belief. But we can do better with those people by sharing our beliefs and preventing the idea that Jews are somehow strangers, even as we get to know other people and we can come to understand about them that they are not strangers either. Been this debate in the Jewish community about dealing with evangelicals, right? And yet, we find that we haven't really understood how they deal with Jews. For a while, we thought all the evangelicals want to convert us to Christianity, and it hasn't been the case. This Jewish community has been dealing with the evangelical community for the last 6 years to great success. So we're sensitive to the idea of people who want to convert us, okay? But that doesn't mean that there aren't allies in the evangelical community with whom we can work if we're willing to sit and share. In a few moments with Aleinu, we will sing Bayom Hahu. Bayom Hahu Yadonai Echad Ushmo Echad. That's from the prophet Zechariah. On that day the Lord shall be one and God's name shall be one. We Reformed Jews believe that building the Messianic world is not someone else's responsibility. It's not going to happen because God sends a personal Messiah. A Messianic world can only happen because we build it. Our every interaction is a religious moment, building toward the Messianic time when we live in harmony with our neighbors. What does Bayom Hahu say? On that day, God shall be one and God's name shall be one. I believe that the world is trending in that direction. I believe personally that the technology, the change in communications is moving us in the direction of one world inexorably. We're going to get there eventually. But we can aid that, we can move that along with our dialogue with one another. Misunderstandings can be diminished. Every person can sit under his vine or under her fig tree, and none shall make them afraid if we are willing to be the agents of change. Kein Yehi Ratzon.